This is Regionally Speaking here on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. It's time once again to check in on some of the viewpoints of Northwest Indiana residents, and one we have had in before, and bring us back again to take a look at some of the issues in particular dealing with the city of Gary and other places in North Lake County is Ruth Needleman. She is an activist in Northwest Indiana and an emeritus professor at Indiana University Northwest here, and is a very astute observer of what happens in the region for many years. And she's back with us in the studio for another look at the latest in things, and including some of the issues involving the city of Gary. Ruth, thanks for being with us today.
What a pleasure. Thank you for having me back.
Well, let's start down the big laundry list here. Well, it's not that big, but it is. There are some interesting things to talk about. And let's talk first here in particular about a very special midday vigil that's going to happen
yes.
in Gary.
This is very important. Back when we were fighting the GEO immigrant prison, we discovered, much to our surprise, that for 11 years, Gary had been doing deportations for the entire Chicago area. And the more we found out, the more we realized that what a tragic use of our airport. I've spent a lot of time talking to Sister Joanne of the Handmaidens, the Poor Handmaidens of Christ. Mm-hmm. And she goes every single Friday at 5 a.m. to meet with the detainees. And they used to come from Broadview. Now they're coming from Kankakee, but mainly they're coming without serious criminal records. These are people, she said, who are basically charged with trying to come back and stay with their families. And she finds it tragic. We find it tragic for two reasons. One, because it's our neighbors who are being deported. I read an article in today's paper that people who have voluntarily checked in, who have been here, this one man they talked about, had been here for 23 years since he was 18. His wife and children are U.S. citizens. He has a job. He has never been arrested in these last, 20 years. But yet he's afraid to even go in for his annual checkup because some people get handed a little note that says, come back next week, you will be deported.
Mm-hmm. I notice there's a story, I think, in the Tribune that talks in more detail about that, that there are many, many people who happen to be illegal immigrants who are very, very concerned about reporting in because they are afraid they're going to find themselves on a plane.
There was another article in today's news about Filipinos. We think we know Latinos and especially Mexican and people from Honduras are being targeted, but we sometimes forget about our neighbors to the far east or west, so far west it's east, in the Philippines. And we have brought over tens of thousands of Filipinos, especially nurses. And now they're faced with the same tragic situation as our other brothers and sisters who came like my grandparents. My grandfather, I have his citizenship papers hanging in my wall from 1907. But he came into this country without any papers, and he didn't have any special skills. And he was fleeing repression, religious pogroms. But this country, and especially this area, was built by refugees from the South, i.e. African Americans, and immigrants from Europe. They built the steel mills. They made the steel. They made the state rich. And we do not like to see the use of the airport. Plus, this airport, we have invested millions of dollars in extending the runway, in trying to fix it up. And ever since these deportations started, where has our passenger service gone? I traced it back, and I found the answer. I finally got a copy of a compact from 1995 between Mayor Richard Daley and Mayor Barnes, in which Barnes agreed that our airport would do nothing but relief work for O'Hare and Midway. In other words, what they don't want to do comes to us. And they are not doing the deportations. We are. And so this Friday, and we timed it, unfortunately, during the day, because that's when the buses generally arrive. They leave Kankakee between 9 and 10, usually. They could come at any time. And the people inside the buses are shackled, and the shackles go from the waist to their feet. Mind you, these are not dangerous criminals. And they are brought into the administrative area and then marched into a charter flight that takes them back to the Mexican border or in some cases to Central America. The problem is many. It's not a good use of our airport. It's offensive to our communities. I mean, you look at a place like Lake Station, East Chicago, high number of immigrants, and also not just Latino. There's Polish immigrants, and there's Russian immigrants. We are a nation of refugees and immigrants. And in these sweeps, what happens is it endangers the whole community because they don't ask you, excuse me, are you a Panamanian black, or are you from Haiti, or are you from Brooklyn? And they pick up people, and with very little chance for any kind of recourse, they're shipped out. So we have people supporting this vigil at the airport from 10:30 to noon from Valparaiso, from Hobart, from Temple Israel, from East Chicago, from Munster. Very broad number of ministers and pastors are coming to express their condemnation of this. And of course, we know that the cardinal in Chicago has told all Catholic schools and all Catholics that no ICE is to enter their property without a specific search warrant for a specific person. And in that same line, we have produced, with the help of Alfredo Estrada, you might want to have him on, he has written an ordinance for welcoming cities that takes into account the Indiana law that says, oh, cities can't be sanctuaries, and also the national law. And Mayor Karen from Gary is very excited about this, and she plans to promote this ordinance in Gary and to join with cities all over the country that are sanctuary cities. Now, mind you, this ordinance is better than the sanctuary city ordinance because that word has become a no-no. We don't offer sanctuary. We don't refuse to cooperate. What it says is the 10th Amendment to the Constitution says no federal agency shall commandeer local police enforcement agencies, which means ICE can't come in and say to Mayor Karen, hey, give us all your police for the day. We're going to do a roundup. We don't have the forces to turn them over for no money to the federal government. That's the main aspect of this. The other is we'll give you information, but we're not going to collect unnecessary information anymore. If you come to enroll your child in school, we're not going to ask for your citizenship papers.
Now, what's the status on this ordinance that you're talking about?
Well, this ordinance was shared with the mayor last week. We've already had a conference call with the mayor and her attorney and the lawyer, Estrada. Next week, we're meeting again. And one of our city council members will introduce it on the 18th. It will go to committee at the end of the month, and we're hoping it will pass next month.
And once again, this this vigil is going to happen at the outside the Gary Chicago International Airport. It's going to be on Friday, and it'll be between 10:30 and noon. And
there will be a press conference at noon.
Okay. That's
so
great.
That, for example, Sister Joanne, who has interviewed all of these detainees for 11 years, will be there, as well as representatives of the different churches and from immigrant societies, organizations will also be there to speak with the press. It's peaceful. We have permission to park in the airport from the executive director and the chairman of the board because they know this is not the best thing for the airport. And so it will be a peaceful demonstration of strength, which we hope will get out into the greater Chicago media, because the people in Chicago, as well as the people here, do not know that deportations have become an every Friday event at the Gary Chicago Airport.
We talk about this compact that had been set up years ago between Mayor Daley at the time and Mayor Barnes at the time. And it was basically what's kind of created the framework to allow the ICE transports out of the area. Is there a likelihood, at least in the view of the airport board, airport authority board, and as well as the city of Gary, that they'd like to revisit this and maybe make some changes?
Well, here's the problem. ICE does not contract with the city. It does not contract with the airport board or with the airport itself. It contracts with a contractor that contracts with the Jet Center. Mm-hmm. And so there are so many layers of organizations in between that they've protected us. But we most likely, it's hard to get information, we most likely do not benefit financially. Certainly, the buses bringing the detainees are from Illinois. The detainees come in with sheriffs from Illinois. The private charter company doesn't hire anyone locally. And so it is a non-job-producing, non-profit-producing misuse, abuse of our airport.
Let's take a moment now to talk about the next issue that is in the city of Gary, dealing with the Gary Community School Corporation.
We know there's yikes!
there's a bill that is going through the General Assembly. In fact, there's one version of it. The House is going to take up the Senate bill maybe as early as tomorrow or Thursday. And then, of course, it'll go, because it's a Senate bill, will go to a conference committee for some modifications, reconciliation, as they call it. The version that will come out from that conference committee will then come back to both chambers, Indiana House and Senate, and come up again before the vote hopefully will go on to Governor Holcomb's desk for a decision. This is the bill that, if it's gone through and has been amended since the original writing by State Senator Eddie Melton of Maryville.
It's been amended many times.
It's dealing with the financial issues that the City of Gary's School Corporation is going to work out. It calls for, among other things, the creation of an emergency manager and a special board that will report to the emergency manager to deal with the financial matters of the school corporation. The matters of involving money for the school corporation.
It's gotten worse.
And on top of that, it will be taken out of the hands of the Gary School Board, Gary Community School Board itself. They will no longer be able to handle, they'll only handle the academics.
No, they won't, because the new version of the bill says that all financial and academic decisions will be in the hands of the state-appointed consultant manager. Outside person.
And we should mention, too, this person that will be appointed or hired, as you wish, if you look at it that way, by the Distressed Unit Appeals Board, which is the board of which the Gary Community School Corporation has been having to deal with for some time, ever since they've been in their financial straits.
Here's the problem. It looks like our Republican downstate legislators would like to take the place of government in Northwest Indiana. They are making decisions that apply only to Lake County or only to Gary or only, I mean, there are so many of them, and they just redid this bill. I spoke to Eddie Melton, our senator, last night, and I commend him for his hard work. And I want to mention that he's not the only one. All of our legislators are working on this piece of legislation, because what Eddie pointed out in front of the Senate is that no takeover of academics has worked. It's one thing to take over the finances, but they want to put it all in the hands of one person, although he did say it won't be Jack Martin. He has been a triple failure. After destroying the schools in Detroit, we brought him in to destroy the Gary schools.
Now, do you think that in light of this, that there'll be another amendment that'll come up here before the final vote?
Well, he definitely...
About the academics taken out of the bill.
They want that taken out. So this Friday, and this is an appeal to everybody in the Gary area, there will be a meeting at on Polk Street where the Gary School Corporation is located. I think it's 1988 Polk.
Yeah, it's former elementary
right,
school.
At 4 o'clock, there will be a legislative update and an explanation of what's happening. And our legislators need you to go, because the possible results of a complete academic and financial takeover spells the end of public education. The other thing that Eddie is putting in is a cap on the number of vouchers that can go to private and charter schools in Gary, because it has become a joke. They have completely defunded the public school system with these vouchers. And then they say, hey, you're not keeping up fixing your schools. We fix the charter schools. The state gives money to the charter schools before it gives it to the public schools.
So someone's having an interesting issue coming up again before the final vote concerning the Senate bill and then the version that's going through and will be going through the conference committee concerning the Gary Community School Corporation.
I have to tell you one thing else about the vigil because I'm very proud of
this. Oh, yes. Go ahead.
We have an international endorsement. Indivisible Tuscany in Italy has endorsed this protest. Very excited.
I wonder if they can manage to send a representative here.
Well, I asked, and they said probably not. So maybe we should be an endorser and not a sponsor.
Ruth Needleman, before we finish up this conversation, let's take a few minutes and talk briefly, because we don't have much time left, about another issue that is, so to speak, another burr that has gotten under the saddle, and involving something that the legislature is working through, of course, is the dealing with the infrastructure. And we're talking, in this case, roads and bridges. And the way that they would like to, the legislators would like to deal with it is by increasing the state's gasoline tax. And you see some major inequities with the increase here. Tell us about that.
I cannot express greater inequity. I happen to be the owner of a hybrid. To get this hybrid in 2009, so it's not new, I had to spend an extra $10,000. And in exchange for my concern for the environment, this gas tax bill will penalize me for not using enough gas and will charge me a fine on top of my paying the 10% for gasoline. And if you have an electric car, the fine is even larger. But if you drive a reckless truck or a safe truck, but if you drive a truck that does more damage to our roads than anything else, you pay less than every citizen and resident in this area. That is so regressive. Regressive means that the poorer you are, the larger percent of your income will go to gas. Something, given our public transportation system, residents have to use, because you can't get from here to there without a car because buses are so few and far between. So we need less regressive tax. And one last point, I remember when they sold the toll road. And they got big bucks from two international corporations from Australia and Spain. Where did that money go? Now, according to Senator Talian, a lot of that money is sitting in the bottom drawer in the governor's office. And I say, why are we further ripping off some of the poorest people in this state and hoarding money so they can say, we have no deficit? Governments without deficit are not doing their job.
Ruth Needleman, who's a Northwest Indiana activist and in turn very much interested in this special vigil that's going to happen on Friday at about 10:30 in the morning for about an hour and a half outside the Gary Chicago International Airport.
So easy to get to.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
There is Airport Road off of Klein Avenue. If you happen to be on the toll road, you get off at the Klein Avenue exit 10, and you can see the airport from there, and stress-free parking at the airport.
Ruth, thank you very much for taking some time being with us today here on Regionally Speaking. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. The city of Gary is helping anyone who wants to start a food business. They have a culinary food incubator. And clients, we should say that the incubator, by the way, is thanks to a Night Cities Challenge grant. And the clients are raving about the valuable help that they get from successful food businesses right here in Northwest Indiana. Lakeshore Public Radio Stephen Lattimore talked to some of them, and he has for us this report.
At Big Daddy's Barbecue in Gary, founder Gordon Biffle has found the secret to success.
Be patient. If you want to do something, make sure it's something that you are passionate about. You got to be passionate about what you want to do. You want to like what you're doing. I love cooking.
That plus really good barbecue has taken his company from 7 employees to 40. From selling barbecue at his local flea market to a location in Gary and one in Hammond, and plans for a third restaurant.
Getting into this business, I knew how to cook, but it was a whole nother side, a whole nother paying taxes. The first time I was late on my taxes and I got a penalty for almost $1,000, you learn quick. I had to write that letter And, you know, they let me go, but I never did it again.
He's taking what he has learned and is sharing it with others as part of the Culinary Business Incubator. It's located at the Art House Restaurant, A Social Kitchen in Gary. Karen Freeman Wilson is the mayor.
So the theory behind the Culinary Incubator is that we would allow those people who are who have ideas for food-related businesses to explore their business concept, to explore what it would take for them to be successful, and to begin their business in a setting where they're being really cultivated, nurtured, where they're getting the advice of established business people, and where they are then able to determine, yes, this is something that's viable. Well, maybe I need some more work on the concept. Or no, this is not something I want to do. I'll just keep cooking for my family.
They help you get some money for your business.
On a Tuesday evening, a group of budding entrepreneurs listen to a real estate expert. She's telling them about the do's and don'ts of finding a brick-and-mortar location. Beverly Savage Miller is with Prime Real Estate.
You know what? I made sure that they got a lot of information pertaining to commercial real estate, allowing them to think before they decide to get into the different structures of what real estate or what commercial property would be like for them. I told them about how they can get involved with having a standalone restaurant, or they can have a strip mall, or they can have just a plain old shopping center type of structure. My thing that I want to tell everybody is keep your nose clean when it comes to your credit. Everybody doesn't have a silver spoon where you can go ahead and allow people to give you money. You have to get that money on your own. And a lot of times, if you have good credit, the banks will give you money with no problem.
Oscar Williams runs Anna's Small Batch Kombucha. It's a fermented tea.
Came to learn about real estate and make some more network with the community, local Gary community. I learned some interesting information about lease options on brick-and-mortar spot.
Tranissa Williams came in from Chicago. She's looking to start a food truck.
Getting a bevy of information. I liked how she broke down how commercial properties are leased and rented, so I really enjoyed that. And I like the fact that she let us share a lot of information about our own businesses and how she was able to get a sample of the kombucha for us. But even since then, since I've been coming, I think this is my fourth or fifth session, I've been learning bits and pieces that I can kind of take away. Craig Robinson from Batter and Berries was here, and I appreciated how he was candid about how they went broke three times. The guy with the food truck, I cannot remember his name, but I enjoyed how he talked about, it was enlightening how he said, hey, I bought an $8,000 truck and put $40,000 into it. So from the financial standpoint, I'm getting a lot of information to kind of help me avoid those pitfalls.
In Gary, Stephen Lattimore, Lakeshore Public Radio.
We take this opportunity once a month to bring Tom Pappas, who is a member of the City of Portage Veterans Committee, and with us to talk about these issues. Tom, thanks for joining us here.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
And one of the things I know coming up for this April meeting is going to focus in on homeless veterans. Tell us who's coming in to talk about that and what they're going to discuss.
Yvette Williams, I hope I said it right. Mm-hmm. She's coming in. She's with the VA/HUD, and she's going to present on veterans benefits, homeless veterans benefits. And I invited her in because there's no federal money going to Porter County for homeless veterans right now. It's all concentrated in Lake County, mm-hmm. and then over the border in Illinois and in Cook County.
Is there a move or plans underway in some kind of move to be able to shift that money over or make it available in Porter County?
It's all grants. I had one of the committee members, Bob Rodriguez. He called all the facilities that help homeless people and homeless veterans in Porter County and invited them to attend our meeting tomorrow. My hope is that everybody will come together, will identify the need, and then reach out to the federal government to secure funding for those needs.
Now, what have you folks on the City of Portage Veterans Committee found out so far about how many homeless veterans there are in the county and the problems they have?
We haven't found out anything. My one member who is the front point person for homeless vets has been sick. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that he'll return shortly, and I'll sic him on the issue because that's his issue.
We know that they are out there, obviously. And
yes.
So maybe it seems that they may be concentrated somewhat in Lake County, but just the same, you know, they have to be in certainly maybe in Portage and maybe in Valparaiso, some other communities.
Oh, sure, they're out there. A few weeks ago, I found out about one too late. He was holed up in a little trailer in the back yard of somebody's house. Passed away, we found out that he was a homeless veteran.
Okay.
They disappear into the woods, and it's hard to find them.
Probably quite literally in some cases,
yes.
I would imagine, too.
Literally, yes.
Right. So that's one of the topics coming up. What else is going to come up at this April Veterans Committee?
We have the homeless issue. We have Work One is coming in to talk about what they call it, for work, for job fairs.
Oh, there job fair, go. Yes. Mm-hmm.
There we go, job fairs.
Are there any veterans-related job fairs coming up that they're planning that you know of?
Yes, they have some. I don't have the dates. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to be presented tomorrow night. And the last issue is veteran suicides. We didn't have that last month because the presenter got the flu.
Oh. Well, it'd be better for them to be well to come to this. It's very
yes.
important that they not,
oh,
not
yes.
be ill, I suppose, to make the presentation before the Veterans Committee. Last time we talked, we started on the conversation, and we wanted to carry it on in a little
sure.
more detail here. You had been doing some work in seeking through the Freedom of Information Act some information from the Department of Veterans Affairs on various topics, in particular dealing with treatment and the cost of how much the health care treatment would be for veterans in Northwest Indiana. Give us an idea of what you were seeking out at the time.
Well, I was trying to identify two issues. One, how far veterans were traveling for health care within the VA system, and two, the money that was leaving the communities with those veterans. And it's pretty significant money when you look at it. I did a financial, just a rough financial impact study, and mm-hmm. I'll have to find it here, for each county. And it was, here it is.
We're talking six counties here, aren't we?
Six counties, yeah, right. Yes. The six counties that are in Vision 12.
Mm-hmm.
For healthcare, but Vision 11 for benefits. And when you start looking at what the VA gave me for average cost of a procedure, it amounts to, let's look at Lake County, $25 million a year directly. But if you do the multiplier, and I use a multiplier of 3, very conservative, that's $75 million a year that's leaving Lake County's hospital community, their healthcare community. Mm-hmm. This is money that could be spent in Lake County in, I don't know, what we have, 4 or 5 hospitals in Lake County.
Yeah.
That money could be spent in and provide jobs here in Lake County for people interested in the medical professions.
One of the other things, too, I know that you mentioned not only a concern about the impact of the Veterans Choice Program, which is what we're talking about. This is the program that, if you're not familiar with it, the VA has set up here in this past year to allow veterans who may be living a certain distance, and there is a specific mileage that is mentioned.
40 miles.
40 miles between from their home to the closest regular VA medical center. And in this case, most of them are talking about the outpatient clinic
in
Crown Point. And even further than that, when you talk about having to travel all the way into Chicago to get to the hospital. And it's an opportunity for veterans to be able to use local medical facilities, healthcare facilities, hospitals, and the like for certain treatments that they in turn the VA will allow to be able to stay closer to home and not have to make these long treks if it's becoming inconvenient. And you've discovered and talked at your meetings, I know, almost ever since the meetings began, about the problems that some veterans have in trying to get from their home to get to the clinics, whether it's Crown Point or Chicago.
Yes, and I put in a FOIA asking how far the Crown Point Clinic, Adam Benjamin, is from the medical center in Chicago, Jesse mm-hmm. Brown. And by the government's own piece of paper, mm-hmm. 45.8 miles. All right? So you see how hypocritical this choice criteria is. They say if you live within 30 miles, 40 miles of a VA healthcare facility, you can't use the Choice Act. Well, yes, that's good. You're within 40 miles of Adam Benjamin, but what if they can't provide the services you need there? Well, sorry, you still have to go to Jesse Brown. Okay? It's kind of morphing. I've been told that now the primary care physician can recommend that you go outside of the system, mm-hmm. But not every primary care physician is going to do that.
Have you heard of any additions, so to speak, to the Veterans Choice program? That is, we're having more Northwest Indiana clinics, hospitals, and the like that are participating or have seen veterans as patients?
Three of myself and two other committee members went to a town hall meeting in Laketon, Indiana. Mm-hmm. I like to go to meetings away from this area because you discover things that you wouldn't otherwise. And what I discovered, and it shocked me, America has two choice companies managing the choice program. There's TriWest and HealthNet. HealthNet is our provider. Mm-hmm. TriWest has taken their employees, and put them in the medical centers to help veterans address billing issues. HealthNet has not.
Is there any reason you've discovered why?
No, I've been trying to run down. His name is Gregory Swanson. He is an administrator for HealthNet. I've invited him to come into and present at one of our meetings. He hasn't confirmed that he would. I don't know what's going on with him. I've contacted Senator Donnelly's office, and I have to praise the efforts that man puts forth for veterans. And they're looking into what's going on with HealthNet, not stationing an employee in every medical center. And I've suggested to the director, Jesse Brown, that if that occurs, maybe to have that employee move on a regular basis to the community-based outpatient clinics like Adam Benjamin. Mm-hmm. Go there a couple days a month. If you have a choice billing issue, be it Adam Benjamin the first Tuesday or whatever.
Yeah, pick a day of the week, that, and they know they'll be there. So
yes.
This way the veteran who has questions, has problems with their billing,
yes.
they'll know who to go to and when their person's going to be available.
And they'll have a person who knows the system from the inside to direct them to where to go, who to see, give them a phone number to get their billing issues resolved.
Well, let's hope that at least this will certainly, I'm sure there'll be more discussion at the upcoming meeting of the City of Portage Veterans Committee about this.
I hope so.
And hope that you'll get some word back from the folks from Health. Is that a nationwide
yes.
provider that is working
There's
with the VA about
nationwide,
this?
There's two nationwide, right. TriWest and HealthNet, and they've got the country pretty much divided. Mm-hmm. Down in the southern part of Indiana, far southern part, TriWest takes care of some of that section of the state. They have an employee in the medical center down there in Kentucky and Tennessee also.
Do you know if, for example, if HealthNet, if they handle Illinois in particular, around the Chicago area or outside the area, within that 40-some miles that is beyond the official reach that the Jesse Brown and whatever mm-hmm. outpatient clinic has, do they have any HealthNet representatives in those particular areas, as you know?
No.
They did not. So it's not a question that it's our particular area. It's just apparently HealthNet overall. They
yes.
may not have, maybe in some locations of the country, but not here. Apparently.
Not here. The TriWest employees and medical centers came as a surprise to the director at Jesse Brown. He didn't know of it either. There's so little knowledge being shared. If you don't actively go out and try to find it out, you'll never know about it.
Now, have you heard on a wider scale? We know there was a lot of discussion, a lot of concern, and some changes, of course, were made when the big outcry happened to the entire Veterans Choice Program. Are there any more changes that you've heard of that might come that might affect us here in Northwest Indiana?
I'm waiting. You know, it's all conjecture right now. Mm-hmm. I know one thing that is happening. Some of the primary care physicians are recommending that their patients be included in the choice program to go locally, but not all, just some.
Well, we'll find out more as things develop, and hopefully we'll find out soon about that. Tom Pappas is a member of the City of Portage Veterans Committee. We've been talking about the issues that have come out, and he's discovered and finally gotten some word from the VA via use of the Freedom of Choice Act requests about the Veterans Choice programs. And, of course, again, there's another monthly meeting coming up for the committee tomorrow. It's going to happen, of course, at Portage. Tell us again, for anybody that's interested that hasn't attended, where they can, what times and where they go.
5 o'clock at Woodland Park, 2100 Willow Creek Road, in the administration building and Sycamore Room. And there's one thing that everybody needs to know, and it was due to a lot of hard work in this next biennial budget for Indiana. The Big Four, the service organizations, and the Military Veterans Coalition of Indiana worked together for a change. They've now gotten $500,000 for homeless veterans in the budget.
Right.
$500,000 for hyperbaric oxygen therapy treatment for veterans, and $300,000 for veteran service officers.
Well, it sounds promising in particular about the issue of homeless veterans that we talked about here at the start of our conversation about that being one of the discussion points at tomorrow's meeting, and making sure that communities that feel they can look further into helping homeless veterans in Porter County in particular, where they might be able to apply for additional funds, the funds that they maybe need to get the work started.
It's a grant. All they have to do is come together and someone figure out how to write a grant.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't even know this stuff is out there. They're so busy trying to meet a need with limited resources, they don't have time to go out and educate themselves.
Tom Pappas, thank you very much for spending time to talk here about veterans issues here in Northwest Indiana. We appreciate it. And again, the next City of Portage Veterans Committee meeting is going to be tomorrow evening, and you can attend that if you wish. And veterans all across Northwest Indiana are welcome, not just from Porter County, from folks from
here.
We've
had them all the way from Rensselaer come in.
That's great. That's great. Well, thank you very much, Tom, for stopping by with an update on this. We appreciate it.
This is Quantum Leap Soundbites, brought to you by Indiana Humanities. This series is part of Indiana Humanities' Quantum Leap Initiative, which invites Hoosiers to explore and celebrate the spirit of possibility and problem-solving that occurs when we bridge the humanities with science, technology, engineering, and math. On this week's episode, we're connecting the past and present of Hoosier innovation. Practically everyone has heard of Madam C.J. Walker, the famous innovator, entrepreneur, and the first female self-made millionaire in the United States. In the early 1900s, she created an extremely successful hair care line for black women. But according to her great-great-granddaughter, Alelia Bundles, it all started with Madam Walker's problems with her own hair.
She was losing her hair, going bald, and experimented with different products, some that were already on the market and some homemade remedies, and ultimately came up with a shampoo and an ointment with medicinal sulfur that healed her scalp infections that allowed her hair to grow back, and hence Madam Walker's wonderful hair grower.
So Madam Walker filled a hole in the market where no one was marketing to women of color. 100 years later, there was another hole in the black hair care market. But this time, it wasn't products that were missing. When Ashley Gaynell Scott was in college at Butler University, she began to transition her hair away from chemical relaxing to its natural state.
I got my first relaxer in third grade, and I've never experienced my natural curl pattern, and here I am, 21 years old.
She wondered whether she would be viewed the same in society, whether she could get a job with her natural hair, whether she could have relationships. She wished she had a community to talk to about all this. Since she didn't know anyone at Butler who was transitioning to their natural hair, she looked online. But she only found blogs of older women who were documenting their hair journeys. And these were helpful to a point, but according to Ashley, there are huge differences between college students and adults.
The first is money. That was one of the things that stuck out, is that some of these women who were married with kids, who were blogging and vlogging and video blogging, you know, about their experience, they had two incomes. So, you know, they could afford to try a ton of products. Another thing I think that is challenging for college students compared to folks who are older is just kind of the confidence. You know, college is a very, you know, challenging time in your life where you're kind of discovering, like, who I want to be when I grow up and how am I going to get there? Am I good enough? And so the last thing you need is, you know, an issue with your self-confidence because you don't feel beautiful because you've chosen to embrace your hair.
So after graduating, Ashley decided to do something about this missing community. After all, she grew up in Fort Wayne as the daughter of two IBM employees and was fascinated by how software could enable community. So just like she did when she was a young girl looking for community, she started a blog. Now, this website was much more sophisticated than her Zing blog was as a preteen. She called it curlyincollege.com. And it was aimed at helping college students find a community while transitioning to their natural hair.
Kind of try to just celebrate students so that they feel empowered and then feel like they have a choice and that they're making the right choice. Because oftentimes their family and friends will tell them otherwise. So when a student comes to us, they have the choice to participate as a contributing writer to our blog. They have the choice to join one of our on-campus chapters. And those came about because all the contributing writers were like, hey, we want to talk about this in person and share styling tips and talk about our hair journey, and we want to try new products, and we have questions, and we don't know where to go.
Many people think that Madam C.J. Walker is a visionary because of the products that she created. But Madam Walker wasn't a chemist and didn't reinvent the wheel with her products. In fact, they were very similar to medicinal formulas already in use by doctors. According to her great-great-granddaughter Lelia, her real genius was her marketing strategy and the way she mobilized and empowered women.
She tweaked it, and then she had the genius to market it, to advertise, to teach other women her system, to create jobs for them. And this is at a time when, you know, women couldn't vote, women couldn't own property in their own names, and there was a great deal of discrimination against African-American women.
Flash forward 100 years to Ashley. She's not the first person to have made a website before, but she used technology to reach a new audience and to mobilize previously unreached Black women, and to do something new, translate an online community into a company with a social mission that created in-person communities too. 100 years apart, Madam C.J. Walker and Ashley Gaynell Scott have used holes in the market of Black hair care to innovate and launch companies that did more than provide a service. They mobilized and empowered women through uniquely Hoosier innovation. Indiana Humanities connects people, opens minds, and enriches lives by creating and facilitating programs that encourage Hoosiers to think, read, and talk. This has been Quantum Leap Soundbites, and I'm Sandra Burton.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for being with us. I'm going to be with you again tomorrow. We hope you'll join us as well.